Hello, this is Monica Reeds and I'm Georgina Godwin. Hay Festival, one of the world's biggest and best literary events, has just announced the programme for this summer. The festival will take place online from the 26th of May to the 6th of June, broadcasting the world's greatest writers and thinkers for free from Hay-on-Wye, the small town on the border of Wales. And Monica Reeds and Meet the Writers will once again be bringing you highlights from the festival and interviews with the participants. For the next 5 weeks, this show will be focusing on different aspects of this wonderful celebration of words. In this first episode, we'll get an overview of what you can expect with the chair of Hay Festival, Caroline Michelle. Caroline, welcome to Monica Reeds.
Thank you very much, Georgina, and it's lovely to speak to you. Over the years, I think you and I have been to many of the Hay events together. And I've watched you interview our writers, and we're always incredibly grateful for you and your contribution that you make to make the talk so interesting, so varied and so insightful.
Well, you know, the pleasure's always mine. It's always such a delight to be part of it. Now, Hay Festival has been going annually since 1987, but since the pandemic struck, many live events have had to cancel. How was Hay able to keep the show going online?
Well, this time last year, we were looking at a total devastation. We were about to have our 33rd festival. We had everything set up, the site about to be built, and suddenly, you know, the pandemic hit and every single live event was cancelled. And we sat there looking at ourselves and looking at, frankly, you know, whether we were actually going to be able to continue or even exist this, you know, in a year's time. And within that time, we managed to pull together a digital festival because our sponsors supported us, the Welsh government supported us, and our audience supported us. So we ran an event last year, totally digitally, put together within 2 weeks, that we had over 500,000 people register. We had nearly 500,000 live streams, people streaming, going onto the events online. We had an average of 3,500 people take part from over 70 different countries. I think we were amazed and delighted and suddenly saw a future for the festival, for all our festivals worldwide, in a way that we'd never seen it before. A total, as El País said after the Cartagena Festival earlier this year, we basically have democratized culture. We've made it possible for anyone, wherever you are, anywhere in the world, to take part in the Hay Festival.
Mm. You've had 7 digital editions around the world since this time last year. What was the nuts and bolts? How did you adapt to this new normal?
I think it's necessity, isn't it? It's the excitement of suddenly seeing what's possible. Now, Hay has always been very digitally focused. You know, we have the Hay Player, which is our wonderful archive from 34 years with this year of our writers, philosophers who've been recorded, mostly audio, but now visually. And it's an extraordinary resource that is, you know, that is invaluable, I think, to schools, to education, to anybody interested in, you know, the development of writers and thinking and progress and so on. So we've always been very digitally aware. We've run online talks and lectures into schools, into libraries. We've worked with prisons. And this was a possible way now of reaching an even wider audience. And our team at Hay has always been innovative and forward thinking about how we bring what we do to the broadest number of people as accessibly as we possibly can. And because of our sponsors, again, this year, we can do this free and in the most sustainable way, which is our other big, you know, big ambition is to be the most sustainable of festivals as well. Very aware of where the world's going in every possible direction. And yes, I think that's reflected in our programming, too.
Of course, because it does so much more than just simply showcase new books. There are huge conversations around the climate crisis, around global inequalities, our post-pandemic future. What makes Hay such fertile ground for these discussions?
I think, basically, we've always been open to it. And it's a very collaborative place, Hay. We talk a lot to our writers. We talk a lot to our stakeholders. We're always around the world, people who join with us, whether they're politicians, whether they're thinkers, whether they're writers. We ask everybody to feed in, to really help us decide and program what we want to hear. So when I look at the program, which is out there now for everybody to see, and I see we celebrate, we have headline galas, you know, nights of hope. We have the best writers from around the world. We also, you know, we really care about debut novelists who find it very difficult to have a voice because nobody knows about them. So we've got 10 for 10 debut novelists this year. And then I look at what we're, you know, what we're really all concerned about. There's a massive children's program, The Heydays and The Wonders with That, which has everyone from David Walliams and Michael Mopogo and Frelid Benjamin. And then I look at Crossing Borders because we work across the world with our other festivals. And we have Isabel Allende and Wade Davis and Mario Vargas Llosa and Michael Ignatieff and many, many others. And we're celebrating 100 years of English pen. And then I look at where we were a year ago and see that Lem Sisse is curating a three-part festival to mark George Floyd 1 year on. We have our countdown to COP26 with Mark Carney. We have looking at the post-COVID future with everybody from Matthew Gencomer to Noam Chomsky to Ed Miliband, you know, just a wealth of people. And then we look at gender equality, which is one of the big issues, with Laura Bates leading a series of discussions with a whole range of writers and thinkers across the board. Democracy in crisis, again, leaders from around the world, asking historians to reimagine the past. Science, to have Stephen Fry talk to the first human cyborg with his talk with Peter Scott Morgan. It's extraordinary. And then we ask our writers what they would like to do. So Ali Smith, we have her, the only time you'll see her film that she's put together. We're launching Graham Norton's book club with Jojo Moyes and Richard Osmond. It's just a feast of thinking, celebration, pushing boundaries, asking people to rethink the world that we're living in from every single different viewpoint. And that's what's so exciting about it. And that's what I think sort of keeps Hay top of its game.
I mean, beyond Hay, you're also an agent for a number of well-known writers. How have these changes, these pandemic changes, affected the wider industry? And how important is it that events like Hay have been able to continue?
Well, it's been fascinating. I mean, I think a year ago, the entire publishing world didn't know whether we would have a future. And in fact, what we've seen is that the world has actually used the time that they suddenly had thrust upon them to be curious and imaginative about how they use their time. And a lot of that has been in reading and information gathering and knowledge. So we've seen the publishing world in every form, whether it's print, whether it's e, whether it's audio, whether it's podcasts, whether it's, you know, streaming services. We've seen IP become central to how we think and how we exist and how we continue with our lives. So it's been an extraordinary time for writers. And I think a lot of what we're seeing in the agency and the books that are now coming out and hitting the stands is a really thoughtful approach to what the world might be, whether it's through fiction or whether it's through nonfiction. I mean, I have watched in admiration as our industry has really leapt the challenge, the pandemic, and provided as much entertainment and knowledge and information as you could possibly want in as many diverse ways as it can possibly be consumed. So I think we've all learned from it. Yet at the heart of it, there is nothing like going and hearing somebody, you know, eye to eye, seeing, listening, being in the same room as any of the extraordinary kind of names that I've mentioned. And learning and hearing actually, you know, face to face. For me, I mean, it's my idea of heaven, 12 Days of Hay. I'm like a child in a candy store. I just, you know, I can never get to enough things and I never want to leave because it's so exciting.
And what are you particularly looking forward to this year?
Well, I think there's so much. I mean, when I look at the programme in front of me and I've ringed just about everything on every day that I really, really, really want to go and see. And then just as I sit here talking to you, one of my favourite writers, John McGregor, with his new book, Lean, Fall, Stand, I've just ringed his talk. So I think I will be spending most of those 12 days enjoying every one of the events that are on offer.
Caroline Michelle, chair of Hay Festival. Thank you very much indeed. Let's hear from John McGregor now, one of the star turns at Hay this year. He's the author of 5 novels and 2 short story collections, and he's won the Impact Dublin Literature Prize, the Betty Trask Prize and the Somerset Maugham Award. He's been longlisted for the Booker Prize 3 times. His new book is Lean, Fall, Stand. It'll be released on the 29th of April in the UK. John, welcome. Hay is all about telling stories, and your new book explores the human impulse to do that, even when words fail us. Can you give us a brief, no-spoiler overview?
The book starts in Antarctica. There are three men working in Antarctica in difficult conditions, and they get into trouble right from the beginning. It opens with a bang, with a storm, and the whole expedition goes fairly disastrously wrong. And a slight spoiler, when one of them comes home, he is damaged and he has a loss of language. And so the book moves to exploring what it means to lose your language and how you continue to connect with other people in that condition.
And in these COVID times, we've seen acts of great sacrifice. And that's another theme that comes up in this novel. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah. So the book kind of shifts focus. It begins in the drama in Antarctica with the what looks like the heroism of the main characters and the kind of the daring adventurousness of their kind of version of heroism and sacrifice. And it shifts focus to the character called Anna, who becomes the main character, who is kind of suddenly thrown into the role of carer. And I wanted to explore what that means. And I wanted to explore and perhaps slightly undermine the idea that carers are self-sacrificing. Because often people who are in positions of caring for somebody else are just thrown into it. And it's not something they choose to do. It's not something they necessarily choose to continue doing. They just have to get on with it. And that's what I was interested in exploring.
So Robert, the man who is injured, is forced to learn a whole new way to be in the world. And that's something that we all, to a greater or lesser degree, have also been forced to do because of this pandemic. How has your life altered during the last year and a half or so of this?
Well, I think I've been in that section of the population who have got away with it quite lightly, to be honest. I think I've been able to continue working at home because writing is a fairly low overhead occupation. I teach at university and I've been able to carry on doing that from home thanks to all the technology that we've got used to. And I've been able to support my children's homeschooling at home. And so, you know, it has been odd and strange and discombobulating, but I haven't experienced the sharp end that a lot of people have.
Mm. Now, we've been hearing from Caroline Michelle, the chair of Hay, about how the festival has had to change. And over your long, very successful career, you must have done hundreds of festivals. And I wonder how this new way of doing things affects you. How do you find it?
Well, do you know what? And I think we're all supposed to kind of complain about doing online events, but actually I kind of love it. And I think it has radically opened up what a book event or any kind of cultural event can be in quite unexpected ways. So I did an event a couple of weeks ago. Myself and another writer were talking about a short story about Alice Munro and examining it in quite nerdy detail. And it's the kind of event that probably would have had a dozen people in a bookshop previously, but there were 100 people online from across the country and in fact across the world, all really, really interested in talking about this short story. Mm. And I think opening up the audience to people who can't necessarily get to events, can't necessarily travel to events, can't necessarily take time away from childcare or other caring responsibilities to go to events. The online events have enabled people to take part in a new and really exciting way. So I'm kind of all for it.
Now, obviously, Hay is a delight for audiences. But what does it mean to a writer of your stature?
I don't know what you mean by stature. I think, for Hay is one of those festivals, isn't it, that just has that reputation. And you know that if you get an invitation to Hay, that your work is being taken seriously and is going to be shared with people who take their reading seriously. So it's always really exciting to be invited and to be included.
John, many thanks. And Lean, Fall, Stand by John McGregor is published by Fourth Estate. As well as veteran writers and famous names, Hay features authors at the very beginning of their careers. And one of those is Hafsa Zayan. She's a writer and dispute resolution lawyer based in London. Her debut novel, We Are All Birds of Uganda, co-winner of the Murky Books New Writers Prize, moves between two continents to explore racial tensions, generational divides, and what it means to belong. Hafsa, thanks so much for talking to us. This book came about indirectly through your love of grime. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Stormzy, who I've listened to basically for quite a long time, he launched this kind of initiative, Murky Books, which is an imprint of Penguin, and he had an open submission competition. And that's how the book kind of was born. I applied for the competition, and the tagline of the prize was, tell stories that aren't being told. And so this story, which is about the expulsion of South Asians from Uganda in 72 by Idi Amin, was a story that I had recently become familiar with and I thought was one that should be told more widely.
And it does explore this little-known period of history, and it intercuts it with contemporary London. So just tell us a little bit about 1960s Uganda.
So the book actually starts in 45, so just after the end of the Second World War, and it charts the story of an Indian migrant to Uganda. But he was born in Uganda, and his grandfather and his father have a history in Uganda. So we're talking about generations of South Asians living in Uganda, not just sort of a single migrant experience within one generation. Uganda gained independence in 62, so it follows the story of his kind of life under, I don't want to say colonial rule, because Uganda was actually a protectorate of Britain rather than a colony. But in effect, they were almost the same thing. So it follows the story of this protagonist, his name's Hassan, going through sort of colonial Uganda through the independence movement. And then following that, the coup in which Idi Amin took over. So quite a lot of tension there between the local population and the Asian population after the British left. And that's what eventually led ultimately to the expulsion order in 1972. And the expulsion order was essentially Idi Amin saying to the South Asian population, you have 90 days to leave my country. And if you don't, I'll put you in an internment camp and you can't take anything with you. So these sort of vast kind of businesses and empires that the South Asians had amassed in Uganda were all left behind.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? And I think what's really interesting too is that group then became the most economically successful racial group within Britain. Now you pick up on that because Samir is a young high-flying lawyer who is the descendant of Hassan, and you look at his life in present-day London.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the key themes of the novel is success and the meaning of success and the concept of what it means to be successful and whether success actually gives you happiness. I think in particular for immigrant children, it's a big theme, regardless of whether you're a South Asian Ugandan or not. It's a big theme because your parents who are immigrants tend to have made quite a lot of sacrifices. They've had quite a hard life to bring you to kind of the position that you're now in. And, you know, you see their sacrifices and you see their successes and you kind of wonder what it is that you can do to make yourself, you know, match that. How can you achieve success when your parents, you know, came to this country with nothing and built up this big business or, you know, became, you know, these professionals or whatever? And I think for Samir in particular, I mean, he's got this conflict because his family are successful business owners, again, having come to the UK penniless and built up another kind of empire from scratch. And he is followed the sort of typical course, the rat race, ended up going, you know, through some very good universities, Cambridge, and then basically ended up in London working as a lawyer. And by all means, from capitalist definition of success, he's very successful, but he's also unsatisfied. And that's what leads him on the journey that he ends up undertaking in the course of the novel. So yes, he has his own experience of trying to understand what exactly it means to be successful and how he can feel like he's achieved something in the light of his parents' sacrifices and his parents' position.
Mm. Well, in terms of what it means to be successful, I mean, you're appearing on the programme at Hay alongside a host of literary greats. And I wonder what that means for you to have this huge success, to be at one of the world's biggest festivals with your debut novel.
It's an incredible honour. I'm sort of blown away by the reception that the book has had. It's all very new and exciting for me. This is obviously something that I haven't been doing my whole life. I've always known about Haig because I've been a big sort of, you know, avid reader and been really into literature, but never actually put pen to paper until this competition came about, you know, in a formal way. And so to have a festival like Haig interested in hearing me speak and inviting me to their events is just an incredible honor. Mm. The whole thing feels quite surreal, I have to say. you know, from the moment I won the competition, this was back in June 2019, and I had Stormzy and Mallory Blackman presenting me a prize in front of at the London Palladium, in front of sort of the entire Penguin and all these journalists and people from other sort of, you know, areas of the publishing world. And I just had to pinch myself because it just didn't feel real. And I think the trajectory that's gone on since then has felt similarly surreal, and Haig is kind of the cherry on the top.
Yeah, and of course these have been surreal times for all of us with the global pandemic. It's your first time at Haig, as you say, but because of the pandemic, it's a festival unlike any before. There are no big tents, there are no huge signing queues, and I wonder why you feel, or indeed if you feel, that festivals really matter in these hugely challenging times.
I mean, there's something so special, isn't there, about being with other people. And I think we've all learned that over the past year. Yeah, well, it's been a full year, which is also very surreal to think that a whole year has passed. But there's something that's almost, you know, irreplaceable about being in physical proximity with other humans. We crave it. I think we need it. It's not just the social contact of your close family and friends, but just a general humanity population of being with people. And it's got to the stage where now, you know, you watch a movie or a film in a pre-COVID time, or you look back at photos of you at a festival or at a wedding mingling with all these people, and you almost feel, you know, kind of repulsed, like, is that real? Did that actually happen? Because we've suddenly in the space of a year become so conditioned. But this is the beauty of, I think, human nature. We're so adaptable. And I think, you know, the way that we may now have to carry on festivals, you know, partially virtually, is something that we can all adapt to quite quickly. I mean, we've adapted in so many ways already to the effects of the pandemic. And I think, you know, the importance of continuing to have these kind of events, it cannot be understated. Just the way in which we have them, we just have to adapt. And you know, that's something that I think that we're all perfectly capable of doing, and we actually do quite well. So I'm really looking forward to it, to the festival itself, my first ever virtual festival, and I'm sure the rest of the population will be as well.
And of course, the beauty of it is that people can watch you wherever they are in the world, because this will obviously be online. It'll be on the Haig Player, and people can join the event from anywhere. Hafsa, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
That is Hafsa Zayan, and her book is We Are All Birds of Uganda, and she will be appearing at the Haig Festival. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to my producer, Nora Hull, and researcher, Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.